Hello, Timberlake. Hello. I want to say hi to the entire Timberlake Nation, whether you're a Redmondite or a Duvalian or Issaquanian. It's great to be able to spend the weekend and take a look at the Bible. Welcome to episode 2 in a series that we're calling, Is It Possible? And certainly there's a key verse that this pivots on, the verse that talks about all things being possible. So we're really not asking the question, is it possible? Kind of moving more toward how is it possible? And I want to address this question that's built upon last week, in case you didn't get a chance to take in episode 1. It's available online at timberlake.com, and you should check that out. But I want to build on that. Last week was about, is it possible to have conviction? I want to talk about this. Is it possible to avoid spiritual scams? If you're new to the Timberlake scene, perhaps you're also new to one of the little taglines that you see around here, and it's all about casual atmosphere, serious faith, and what? No weird stuff. So I want to address the weird stuff part of that. The idea of being scammed spiritually. It's a very interesting question, and it's not exactly novel in our time or our lifetime. One thing we're aware of is that all successful scams of any kind exploit or harness fear. And so if you want to grab your notes, you'll see that we can follow along and kind of fill in the blanks. But fear is what scams are all built on. And guess what? It's fear season, isn't it? Yeah, it's that time of the year where everybody kind of looks toward the fright approach to life. I know at the box office, all the movies are all Dracula and, you know, and kind of scary stuff, the pre-Halloween scene. I know as a kid, a long time ago, we didn't have all the cool costumes that are available nowadays. I mean, I noticed that at Costco, the Halloween costumes came out about July. I'm sure there's a bunch of maybe your children who have worn their costume out already because they have so much fun dressing up. But they're always available and, you know, very sophisticated. But when I was a kid, we just had to make up our own. And so I would always procrastinate until the last second and then just go with the classic sheet over the head with two holes, you know, trying to kind of sort of scare people like I was a ghost, but it wasn't that scary because the only sheets I could find were floral sheets from my sister's room, so you know, it was less scary. But it's that time of year. In fact, driving toward Redmond, I went past this little place that many of you are aware of. It's Wild Waves. How many of you know where that is? It's got all the water slides and everything. Well, during this time of year, it's not water slide time. Now it's Fright Fest. And it said $22.95, what it said on the big reader board, to come to Fright Fest, which I don't even know what Fright Fest is, but I would think just, you know, pay your admission fee and go in and, like, just watch CNN. Because to me, that's kind of one of the most frightening things going. But fear is something that we're all familiar with, whether we have experienced fear sort of virtually at a box office or on television or in our own lives. We all know what that's like. And that's where scams are built. They're built on exploiting common fear. And we know that when there's a scam, there's also scammers. And the Bible actually addresses this. Very interesting. The first pastor of the church in Jerusalem, his name was Peter. And now we kind of think of him as, you know, Saint Peter. And, of course, we've, you know, developed a whole mythology about how he's going to be waiting there for us at the pearly gates and all that. But he was actually a follower of Jesus Christ. And most people feel like, historians feel like, that he was the sort of elder statesman of that group. We know that he was originally a fisherman, so he had that maritime background, but he became a pastor and was a leader in the very first church that happened in Jerusalem. And he wrote a couple of letters. And so in the new part of the Bible, there's some of you are maybe new to the Bible, there's an old part that's about primarily a country in the Middle East called Israel, and then there's a new part that's primarily about an Israeli guy named Jesus. So they go together. But in the new part, there's some letters that these church leader guys wrote to different churches, and they're very helpful to us and instructional. And so Peter wrote the letter, two letters, 1 Peter and 2 Peter. Okay, the first letter from him, the second letter from him. And so when you get to the second letter, it's a very interesting a very interesting set of instructions that he gives us. And one of the things he talks about is that there are going to be people who try to mislead us, try to scam us. And he says in 2 Peter 2:1, there were, so he's saying like, you know, back in the day, in the old part of the Bible, also false prophets among the people, right? And there will be false teachers among you. That's what he's telling the readers. He said, you can just expect it. There's going to be people who are going to try to exploit a fear and try to spiritually scam you, just like there are people who try to scam us in other ways, in other arenas of life. And it's true that right now, I'd say current fears are fears of contagion, conviction, and companionship. That's what I've come up with, as three little categories. And certainly we could expand on those, but most of us are aware that, let's face it, who doesn't know that the Ebola virus is sort of the lead story, you know, in every kind of periodical or any kind of announcement, right? Because there's this incredible fear that somehow this could affect us, that this is a contagious situation that could travel. And so there are people that all over are trying to address that. And because, obviously, that freaks us out. I mean, we're all thinking, man, we got to take this seriously. I mean, this is life or death, right? And so there are already a bunch of different scams that are exploiting that fear. There's an Ebola kit that's available online for $20, which has goggles and a little suit and a spray bottle. The CDC says that the only thing that you're actually purchasing is a false sense of security, because it absolutely would not protect you. But people are thinking, hey, you know, and they're selling like crazy, right? There's actually another scam based on the Ebola virus contagion fear, and it's an herbal supplement, sort of like a multivitamin, you know, a natural multivitamin, and it claims to then, you know, contribute to your immune system to the degree that, you know, you would be safe in any kind of situation, even if, you know, you were around somebody who was contagious. Obviously, a completely false claim, but people are, you know, buying them like crazy, right? Hey, I mean, what if? And even in some of their accounts, they say there's a very small percentage that this would actually work. And people are thinking, so you're saying there's a chance, right? How many of you remember during the incredibly just horrific tsunami and then the ensuing disaster in Japan with the nuclear facility and, you know, nuclear waste and all that? Remember what happened in our area? Suddenly, you could not get iodine anywhere at any drugstore because people were saying, hey, this is the only sort of antidote for, you know, radioactive kinds of, you know, assaults on us. And it was, people were saying, well, it's not true. That's not gonna take care of us. But it was panic, right? And so people take advantage of that. There's not only contagious fear, but conviction. My mother is in her mid-80s. And she's still, you know, pretty crazy little sharp lady, you know, who's like really full of ideas. And she I visited her last week, and she goes, I got a phone call from the IRS, and they said that I owed back taxes, but they could take care of it if I just give them my Visa number. And she said, I think they're wrong. And I go, well, how did you know that it was, you know, just, it was a scam? She goes, because I don't pay taxes. You know, and like she hasn't had any income for 20 years, right? So she doesn't pay taxes. And so then she tells them, you know, never mind. She hangs up. And I go, good for you. Then she gets another call. It's the police calling because they found out that she told the IRS, you know, to, you know, take off, and now she's in big trouble. And this is how that IRS scam goes, because we're all freaked out, and especially her particular demographic is concerned that somehow they're going to get thrown in jail. They're like last generation that really is impressed with being thrown in jail, you know. it's sort of grown out of that for some of us, but like, okay. But for her, it was very frightening. And this is a very common phone scam right now that's based on this fear of conviction, of being convicted, you know, and being in trouble. And then there's a very common, they call it different genres of this. It's called the romance scam, or it's really about companionship. In fact, there's a whole list of questions, and not to incriminate you, don't lift your hand if this is you tonight, but here's a few questions that will identify whether you are susceptible or in a position where you could be scammed in terms of searching for companionship. Have you been on a dating or social network site in the past 6 months? Don't raise your hand. Okay. Has someone fallen in love with you very, very quickly as a result of your online activity? And do they claim to be from the U.S. but presently working overseas? And have they requested that you help them financially? And are they coming to visit you very, very soon, but certain things prevent them from coming right now, right? And do they have no close family, friends, or business associates that they can count on and turn to, and you're the only one in the world that can help them? Okay, this is the profile, a very common thing, and it's based on this fear of, hey, you know, being alone and not having a relationship that's significant. And all of us would have that fear, and it's built on that. And these are the very, very popular ongoing scams. Many of you are aware of that. So what happens is when you take these kinds of common scams that are built on a fear of contagion or fear of conviction or fear of companionship, and you translate it into the spiritual realm, this is where the letter from Pastor Peter is very helpful to us, because he tells us what would motivate somebody to do this. Why would someone want to frighten you or exploit a fear you have in a spiritual area? Why would they do that? Well, he tells us. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 3 says this: in their greed, these teachers will exploit you with fabricated stories. Okay? So the thing that motivates this exploitation, you know, based on fear, is greed. It's greed. Can you imagine somebody like me, you know, a spiritual guy with a Bible, one of these little cool little microphones, you know, and I'm 8 feet above contradiction, and you know, I'm trying to get something from you. Wow, I can't imagine that. I mean, what pops in your mind when I say this phrase? Televangelist. Right? I mean, the first thing you think of is like, this is just somebody who's just, you know, kind of got a scam going. There's some kind of a racket, right? And it's important for us not to become super skeptical and just think that everybody's out to get us. But Peter is saying, look, you know, he's the pastor of the first church. He said, listen, this happened a long time ago. It's going to happen today. There are people, and they're motivated by greed. But they're going to build their case on fear. And so, very popular now for the end of the world kind of fear to be something that people can use to exploit. It's like, you know, the left behind idea. Now, some of you might be new to church, and so welcome, but I grew up in church. I was a kid who went through church since I was a little kid, and I got scared to death over the whole idea of the end of the world. Because there were all these movies and all these things about you're going to get left behind. You know, there's going to be two people, and all of a sudden there's going to be one person, and that person disappeared, and you're left. And I just used to freak out about that as a kid. And in fact, sometimes my brother and I would come home from school, and like, nobody was home at our house. We're like, whoa! You know, we didn't know what to do, so we called this one lady in our church that we thought was the most spiritual lady we'd ever met. She was about 90 years old, and we just call her. You know, we had her number on speed dial, you know, and we'd call and ring, 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 and the panic would start to build. And we're looking at each other, we've been left behind. Ring, ring, and of course, she was so old that it took her a while, you know, to get out of her chair, you know, and then she'd go like, hello, and then we just hang up, you know, like, we're cool. Everything's fine, because we figured she's going to go for sure. So we live like this paranoid existence. Well, there are people that have exploited others in this very same fear. I mean, there are people who describe events that are going to happen. A few years ago, there was the aligning of the planets, which was called the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And a bunch of people went to Mount Rainier, and they were going to wait in the middle of the night, this night that the planets aligned, and they were just going to get scooped up by whatever force or, you know, some kind of alien, you know, somebody was going to rendezvous with them. And then they waited all night, and they realized the sun came up, and they walked back down, and they realized that the age of Aquarius was a lot like the old age because their cars had been towed. Because you can't park your car overnight at Mount Rainier National Park, okay? So it's no overnight parking. So they were disappointed, right? But there were people that stirred up this fear, like, you're going to miss out. You're going to get left behind. Some of you might remember this. And May 21st, 2011 was a very interesting time period because there was a guy whose name was Harold Camping. He had a radio show, as you can see, 6:10 a.m., he decided to build his readership and his leadership and his listenership and, you know, his audience and everything, his sort of media empire, based on this idea that he predicted the day that the world would end, that on the 21st, that all the Christians would be, you know, disappearing, everybody else get left behind, and then, you know, divine judgment and all this stuff. Well, May 22nd came around, and he said, well, that was just kind of a sort of a spiritual judgment that we were having, you know, on the 21st. But the real end of the world is going to be October 21st. He was really on to the 21st idea. And then October 22nd came around, and he said, I don't have any idea what I'm talking about. You know, and so it was kind of embarrassing for him, but this is not an uncommon theme. I mean, some of you would even look at the Mayan apocalypse. Remember that one? You know, the Mayan calendar runs out in 2012, and people are freaking out. I always like that little comic where this Mayan guy was chipping away on this calendar, and he goes like, hey, we're running out of room at 2012. That's going to freak people out someday. You know, that kind of deal. And then people had to redefine what was going on. But there was this fear. I just discovered, how many of you remember, my kids are too young to remember this, but there was a guy who's a televangelist. His name was Jim Baker. Kind of a notorious cat because he was thrown in prison for 35 years, served 5 of those years, accused of rape, but then they decided, you know, well, it was consensual, so we're good. So, but he, you know, really big, huge, you know, disaster, public disaster. It was not really that much fun to be a spiritual leader during that time, and I was, okay, so it was just embarrassing, and of course, there was just, it was, you know, huge, and many of you remember Tammy Faye Baker, who was like the greatest thing that ever happened to late night television, and so this kind of whole thing, you know, faded into history until now, when he's back with like a new wife, and who looks, if you want to look it up, check it out, but kind of creepy how similar she looks to the old one, and now here's what he's offering. He's offering 7 years of food in buckets for $3,000, because the end of the world, you know, is just, you know, right around the corner, and we all have to be prepared, and you know, this is the way, and this is just one example, but it's not, you're not buying buckets of food for $3,000, you're making a $3,000 donation, and then you just get the bonus buckets of food. So it's just this crazy, you know, thing that is, you know, continually sort of perpetuating the embarrassment of, you know, the whole idea of people really giving in honor to God and, you know, and donating for a cause and being on a mission, and then it gets turned into this, okay? So I just think it's important that we realize that what Peter was saying in this little book, this letter to the church, hey, it's not for way back then, it's for us. We have to be able to say, what's going on? You know, what's happening here? So I think it's important for us to realize this very next sort of observation, that an installation manual is primary to a user's manual. Okay? Let me explain what I mean by that. Now, many of you, have cookbooks, right? And I know that contemporary cookbooks are called iPads, but I'm saying, you know, if you had an actual cookbook, So you know what that's like. And then not too many of us actually consult what is primary to a cookbook, which is an installation guide for putting a range and an oven into a kitchen. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever installed a range or oven, but I have. And you know, the installation instructions are a lot different than a cookbook. A cookbook just says, preheat the oven to 325. And you just go, okay, there we go. You know, you just count on the fact that it's been wired correctly, that you know, everything is gonna work, that it's been calibrated to that temperature so that, you know, the recipe will all work out. But the installation manual is a much different document. It gets really specific, and it says, and it has a lot of warnings. And I don't know if you can see even this little small, but it's all warning. Warning. Make sure it's grounded. Don't do this. Make sure it's level. You know, it's all these warnings and all these specifics. Well, the letter that Peter wrote to the church is an installation manual. It's primary to just cooking up some good things in life. He's saying unless our theology is installed properly, we're not going to be able to cook much in life in terms of understanding and staying away from spiritual scams. It's very important to realize that our faith must be installed, or one the language he uses is built on. So this is in 2 Peter once again. It's the same little letter that I'm referring to the whole time. In fact, you might want to find that. If you don't have a Bible, we can make sure you can, you know, we have one for you. But if or you can check into a hotel right there, you know, in that bedside table, they have one. But this particular letter to the church is not very often consulted. In case you're somebody who has maybe like a devotional book about Jesus calling, or you know, a devotional book that has like a verse every day through the Bible or whatever, they almost always skip 2 Peter because it's an installation manual. It's talking about, you know, watch out for false teaching and weirdness and people that are going to deny this and that. And it's being specific about what we have to understand fundamentally. So it's not really a kind of a devotional kind of, you know, happy quotable quote type letter, but it's very important. It's fundamental. And he says, look, don't lose a minute building on what you've been given. That's the installation idea. He goes, look, you've been given this understanding of who Jesus Christ is. That's the most fundamental idea in the entire Bible, Jesus Christ. And when people say, I believe, I have faith, I trust Jesus, what do you trust? That Jesus is who he said he was. That Jesus Christ is God incarnate, that he's come and he's created the venue for relationship with God, right? That he's God himself, fully human, fully divine, all right? That's the fundamental. Then he said, on that, once you have that, then you can cook a bunch of things up. You know, once you have this foundation, this building on what you've been given, then you can have faith, good character, spirited understanding, alert discipleship, you know, a discipline, passionate patience, and here's a great nickname for Ben, Reverend Wonder. Isn't that great? So warm friendliness and generous love. So you can see that he said that you can cook up all kinds of things in life as long as we build it on this understanding of Jesus Christ and the faith and trust we have in his life and also the testimony of his life. So it's important that we have an understanding of what was going on during the time that Peter wrote this. And what happened was there was a lot of teachers, religious leaders, who were saying, now Jesus, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. Impressive. You know, excellent teacher, even prophetic, even very spiritual guy. But he wasn't God. And this was called a Gnostic. Gnostic is a Greek word which means knowledge. And this idea that God, you know, had sort of shown up but not fully was a very interesting idea. And that's what Peter is trying to address here. He's saying, listen, if you start there, you'll end up in a completely different place. And he's talking about these false teachers. And we know historically that these were the things that people were, they were trying to teach that Jesus was, in fact, not divine. Well, hey, we've become comfortable with a lot of non-things. Like, some of you have non-dairy creamer in your coffee right now. Non-dairy creamer. Perhaps you've eaten a non-poultry egg. It's called caviar. But you can't have a non-divine Savior. The divinity of Jesus Christ is absolutely a necessary component that has to be installed properly into our faith, or else no way we can cook up what the Bible's talking about. So I thought, well, let's get a smart guy in here for a change instead of listening to me. And so I called a medieval historian, and I did a little Skype call, and he's got his PhD from the University of Washington. His name is Dr. Jim Hugel. He lives in Bothell. And so I called him, and I asked him this question about, hey, these people, from the time that Peter wrote this letter to the church, the very first pastor in Jerusalem, till 300 years later, all these different things had happened, all these different ideas had come up. And I said, tell us about that. And then what happened was, because of this idea that Jesus was, people were identifying him as a good guy but not divine, they had a thing called the Council of Nicaea, right? And that was in 325, and this is where everybody got together and they affirmed what the Bible says. They affirmed the installation instructions. So here's just a little clip of what he said. Smart guy. Now, you can really impress some people this next week. Just throw that into casual conversation. Recently, I've been thinking about the Arian heresy and the Council of Nicaea 325 and Constantinople and, you know, Constantine being the emperor. But you got to ask yourself the question, so what? Well, here's the so what. This was so important that Peter, the first pastor, wrote about this, and 300 years later, they got all the pastors of the world at that time, what's called an ecumenical or worldwide gathering, and they reaffirmed the fact that Jesus was, in fact, divine. And if you have a background so that you understand the Council of Nicaea, they're very, very clear in what they say. I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and of all things visible and invisible. Then when they talk about Jesus, they say, the one Lord, Jesus Christ, the only begotten of the Father, before all worlds, God of God, light of light, the very God of very God, begotten and not made. And that's an interesting distinctive, because Arius was saying that, hey, Jesus, you know, good guy, but he was just the first creation of God. He wasn't God himself. Well, there's a guy named Joseph Smith who wrote about that. And there's guys on bicycles that will come to your door, and if you wanted to talk to them, and you know, they had the opportunity to extend the conversation without getting kicked up the food chain, you could say to them, what you're talking about is Arianism. You're talking about Jesus being the first of the created beings and then was perfected. So that means I, as a created being, can be perfected, and someday I'll have a divinity that Jesus developed. It's crazy. And then you end up some other place, and people say, well, if you don't belong to this church, you're not even, you know, you don't even have a future. And you're thinking, something's wrong here. Why the fear that I'm going to get left out? Why this teaching? Because if we don't install the fundamental idea of the divinity of Jesus, it's not optional if we're going to walk and follow Jesus Christ. And so that's called orthodoxy. So orthodoxy is actually just a belief or a way of thinking that is accepted as true or correct. That's what orthodoxy means. Now, when my mom got called by the IRS guys, right, the only thing my mom had to know is that the IRS only communicates in writing. Some of you have received a letter from the IRS, and you know that. You could say, yeah, that was a fun letter, right? But that's the only way the IRS communicates with taxpayers in the United States. So if you get a phone call from somebody who says they're from the IRS, you could legitimately say that is unorthodox. That is outside of IRS orthodoxy. That's not how they operate. And when anybody approaches you and says that Jesus Christ is not divine, you can say that's unorthodox. That's outside of Christian orthodoxy. The idea of Christianity and the actual foundation on which scams can be built, spiritual scams, is to somehow skirt the issue of the divinity of Jesus Christ. There are a lot of things that are optional. That's not one of them. And that's what Pastor Peter is trying to tell us here. So he goes on, and he sums it up by saying this. With these qualities active and growing in your lives, so he's talking about, you know, this understanding of who Jesus is. Then I love what he says here. No grass will grow under your feet, and no day will pass without its reward. I like that. When no grass grows under your feet, it means you're on the move. You're a person on the move. And every day is a rewarding day to live when we understand the foundation of our faith. And so the question is it possible for us to be spiritually scammed? It is. But when we're aware of the most fundamental idea and reality, and that we stand firm on what Pastor Peter is talking about here, that Jesus Christ is, in fact, God, and that he's the incarnate. He came in flesh and blood, fully human, fully divine, and what he offers us is legit. Then that really protects us from all kinds of unorthodox kinds of pitches that are based on fear and greed. It's really important. I happened to get on an airplane, and I was going to Washington, D.C., and I didn't realize, but I was on the plane on the day of this million-person sort of march on D.C. that, you know, they were going to really try to make a big scene, get in the news and everything. So I'm sitting on the plane, and everybody's talking to each other like, you know, well, you know, hey, what do you think about this and this issue and that issue? And this guy started including me in the conversation. And I was like, I'm just going to D.C. for a different reason. I didn't know. And he said, well, what do you think about this issue? And I said, what do you think? That's a pretty good way to answer it. And he said, well, I just think, you know, doesn't matter, man. I got my opinion, you got your opinion, you know, as long as we both believe what we, you know, as long as we believe, then just go off, you know, just, you know. And I thought, well, okay, sure, you know, and then it's because I want to be friends and just fly peacefully. But I started thinking after talking to him, I'm sure glad the pilot of the plane doesn't have his own personal idea of where north is. Like, I want the guy flying the plane, for me, north is this way. Because I'm not going to end up in Washington, D.C. If you know, somehow, if, you know, true north is an opinion. And that's exactly what the divinity of Jesus Christ is about. It's based on that that we navigate through all other spiritual teachings and realities. And if we are going to be, you know, orthodox Christian folk. And so it's important that we take a look at that and build upon that. Because is it possible to live with conviction? Yes. Is it possible to avoid spiritual scams? Yes. But Pastor Peter gives us great advice in his second letter. And I think it's just helpful and it's important. So I appreciate your kind attention. And you realize that there are hundreds of years of history where people have reaffirmed and kind of recalibrated the compass so that we can continue to follow Jesus and experience this true life that God has for us because of what he's done. So let's be thankful about that. Can we have a prayer before we have our final song? I thank you, God, for not leaving us as like orphans on the doorstep, but really giving us this incredible confidence in your love and your power. I thank you that you have very clearly communicated to us that when we come to you, we come to God. That you are authorized to invite us into relationship with God because you are God. And that's why we worship you. And that's why we place our trust, our faith, our belief in you. Thank you that we can install an understanding of your divinity. And then we can navigate through our lives and not be pulled by fear or be fooled by those who are filled with greed, who try to, you know, just cause us to get lost. So we thank you for that, God. We thank you for guiding us with your word and as a community of those who follow after you.